welcome to the Executive Security Podcast. Today, we're doing something a little different, but I think people are going to really like this. I'm excited because I have a very good friend of mine on the podcast today. I just calculated I've known him for 36 years. He's been a dear, dear friend and colleague. So everybody, Tom Heiser, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Gene. Great to be here.
Awesome.
At 36, what does that mean? You were 3 years old and I was exactly. 10 or something like that?
Well, for our listeners that are all entering the workforce, they go, oh, these are two old effers. So yes, we are. But I think Tom's got some really interesting things to say today. So you know, Tom's been on numerous boards. He was CEO of Click Software that was sold to Salesforce. He was EVP of Dell EMC. He was president of RSA. He's also a guest lecturer at the Management School of Businesses at Babson in BC. I've asked Tom to be a guest today because he has some fantastic advice that he's been giving to me over the last 36 years. And I thought it'd be great to encapsulate this as a part of the Executive Security Podcast. We're going to talk about managing yourself and then managing people. We are going to do this a little bit different. This will be a longer episode, number one, and we're going to break it into two episodes. So today we'll be talking about managing yourself. And then those that are excited to become managers or those that are new to management, we'll do a whole episode on managing people. So that's kind of the lay of the land. So Tom, you know, I mentioned a little bit of your journey, but you know, any things you want to highlight about you know the success you've had over the years?
No, just I've been blessed to work with amazing people and amazing companies. I started with EMC Corporation right out of college in 1984, a week after I graduated. And it was a startup. I was a 45th employee. I planned to spend a few years there, go to B school, whatever. And I spent 30 years there.
Yeah.
And when I left, there was 68,000 employees. And we went from 17 million in sales in 1984 to $23 billion in sales in 2014, when I, quote, retired unsuccessfully for the first time. So just blessed. And then did several private equity and a couple of venture-backed companies, everything from interim CEO to CEO to exec chair, board members, and working with super bright people. I've done some coaching, which I really enjoy a lot. I was blessed by having some great executive coaches myself that helped steer me in the right direction. So yeah, so staying active, still have a lot of energy and want to contribute in any way I possibly can.
I think blessed is a great word, Tom. You're also an incredibly hard worker. I've known Tom for a long time, and when I find myself staring out the window, I go, Tom wouldn't be doing this. I got to get back to work, you know. So you've been in my head, and but we're excited to really jump into these tenets that I think really
I yell at myself too, you know.
Exactly. You can't replace hard work, right? There's IQ points, there's other things, but simple hard work is something we all can control. So that's awesome. So Tom, let's jump into your tenets for managing yourself. And your first one is just do it. It's all about execution. So tell us why that resonates with you.
1 minute of context on this list. So this is something I call them my management tenets or management principles. I started this list about 20 years ago. I was asked to present to EMC's HIPOs, High Potentials at Babson College, the Executive Development Program with EMC. And when I was asked to present, I asked the executive development team what they would like me to present. And they go, whatever you want to present. And I had no idea what to present. So I just started writing down things that I had learned from others and perhaps self-taught. None of these are going to be like earth shattering. Like there's not. But if I learn it from somebody, I'll try to give attribution to that individual. And this list is kind of like a living list over the past 20 years. It's how I manage my business. It's how I try to manage myself. And I'll tell you where I get okay grades and bad grades for that. And one in particular, I'm not saying everybody needs to do this, but if there's one or two that come out of this list or these lists that resonate with you, great. I hope that's the case, but I am not trying to preach that this is the way everybody should manage themselves or the business. The list that we're going to go through today on managing ourselves, because I have managing self, managing people, managing the business. So today we're going to focus on managing ourselves. And this applies to, I think, anything from, you know, somebody right out of college, perhaps to, you know, all the way through to C-suite. So the first one is just do it. The second one is look in the mirror. The third one is related to that, which is they're actually the same thing, is what can I do to affect the situation? The fourth one is express passion, look for passion. The next one is do the best job possible, and I'll give you some more context on that. Final one is get outside your comfort zone, or get outside my comfort zone. The next one is never run from a job. Next one is maintain a high level of self-awareness, and that's kind of a funny one. Next one is if it feels good, don't do it. And then the final one I think we're going to talk about today is focus on what you can control and influence. So those are the managing self-management tenets that we're going to discuss today, Gino.
Great. Awesome. So let's dive into the first one. Just do it.
Okay. So this one this is way before, if you guys remember the Nike motto, just do it. This comes from way before EMC. I'm sorry, way before Nike came out with that motto. And the founder of EMC, Dick Egan, God rest his soul, used to say this to us. And it was just all with the way we were brought up. It was just about getting stuff done. It was all about execution and just focus. And I'm actually flying down to Naples tomorrow, Florida, to golf with the EMC, Roger Marino. And Roger's 85. He was my first boss. He was in his mid 40s right out of college, and love him. He's like, you know, a second dad to me. And so going down to stay with him, and his was an enhancement to just do it is excuses are for effing losers. He used to tell us that all the time. And the first time I learned that at the ripe age of 22, I like to think was the last time I made an excuse in business. And he just pounded that into our heads. It's just like, you control it, you influence it, you do whatever you have to do, but you get the job done. So it was a very intense culture we had. It was not soft by any stretch of the imagination. And if you got stuff done, you were rewarded and you got more and more responsibility. I'm sure, you know, you think of nature, nurture on this, you know, I think there was definitely some elements of nature with me on this, but this was like, there was a lot of development on this.
Yeah.
And Roger loves to hear these stories. We tell him these stories now at 85, and he doesn't remember any of them because, you know, it wasn't important to him then, but it was super, these formative years. It was very, very important.
Yeah, I had the pleasure of working at EMC twice and working for Tom on both go-rounds. Well, I should say he acquired the company. I ended up working at EMC a second time. But it was a culture that if you were like this, you loved to execute, the sky was the limit. But if you were a thinker, and I dare say we had a lot of strategists, but at the field level in the sales organization, it was, you know, sales strategy, but beyond that, don't talk to anybody about product and product feedback and things like that. And I think that was a little bit of a miss sometimes because we were so laser focused on selling whatever was in front of us to anybody would buy it. And if you look at kind of things that happened in the industry as it shifted, I think we missed some of those things. And I always think about it as a CEO of a startup that I love to just do it. But I say you got to polish it a little bit sometimes so that you can finesse your way through some of the more complex problems that happen in a startup.
No doubt about that. You know, anything taken to an extreme is usually not a good thing, right? So definitely, I couldn't agree with you more, Gino. You got to polish the edges on this as well, especially with today's day and age. You know, it's a different. What am I? I'm not a millennial. I'm not a Gen X. Whatever the hell it is. Baby boomer. Right. Yeah. I think things are different between Gen Zers and millennials today.
Yeah. So I think as you go to the next one, Tom, I think accountability. What do you think about when it comes to accountability? And I think you probably think about it as the way we think about it and maybe the way that some of the new generation should think about this.
I'm going to combine those, the next two, Gino, the accountability, quote, look in the mirror. And, you know, what can I do to affect the situation? So, I mean, they're really essentially the same thing. And, you know, when I go into any situation beforehand, hopefully I'm thinking about what can I control? What can I influence? What can I do to affect this? And the outcome is if it's good, I celebrate for about 30 seconds. But if not, then I'm dissecting it and saying, what could we have done differently? And I raised my kids this way, well, whether it worked or didn't, they're all in the workforce and they're contributing to society well and they have great jobs, but it's a little bit of tough love. It's like, and I'm probably harder on myself than anybody else. I remember I hired this guy, Sean Lanigan from Harvard Business School, and he went to Princeton, football player and Morgan Stanley. And he goes, Tom, you are brutally, brutally demanding. He goes, but the only thing that saves me is knowing that you're tougher on yourself than anybody else. So looking inward, look inward and try to say, like, you know, whether you're in a current situation or reflecting upon something that's happened, and never blame anybody else. You know, try to influence that person, whatever it takes. But we're all in difficult situations, and some people pull their weight and others don't. But this one, it's about like just being brutally honest with yourself and holding yourself accountable for the results and being a team player as well. So that's what I'm trying to get at. That's the essence of this one.
When I think about it again, going back to the kids that are just joining us in the workforce, I'm 55 and I sometimes look at them and go, well, you know, they're not working as hard as I do, but I'm not so old as to remember, like, at some point I was in my early 20s and there was some 55-year-old guy who goes, he's got it so easy. And I look at my daughter, our producer, Suzanne, was just talking about her son going off to school, even though he was sick. It's like, they're working differently, but they're still like all my daughters work incredibly hard. Yeah, I know your kids work incredibly hard. So I think there's a lot of hope in the next generation, but I think not being afraid of being accountable, not being a victim. You know, if things aren't playing to your way, think about what you can do to affect those situations. And when you can't affect those situations for whatever reason, then course correct. But hold yourself. I read a book, just blanked on the name of it, Extreme Execution. It's about Navy SEALs. No excuses. We own the situation. We know the situation is going to change. We're going to adapt and we're going to make stuff happen. That sometimes any age group can kind of feel like, well, you know, the CEO made a bunch of bad decisions or our market or this or that. It's like, hey, what can you do to change that? Let's step in. I think those that, especially early in your career, if you show that level of initiative, that level of creativity, that's going to stand out because everybody else is sitting on the sidelines waiting for something to change. So bring that level of creativity.
I was listening to a podcast just 2 days ago from Jeff Bezos. It was fascinating. I could pull up who it was that Lex Fridman. And it's not this specifically, but it's related to this. And what Bezos was talking about was planting a seed or putting a stake in the ground or whatever it happens to be. He talked about this concept of a one-way door versus two-way door. And he talked about, you know, making decisions and at least make a decision and move forward. Right. And it's not really this, but it's about owning it and being accountable. And if that decision is not a good one, think of it as a two-way door. You come back in and you reassess and then you go back out again. He goes, there's very few one-way doors you have that you can only go in that one direction and then you're committed forever. And it was this type of thing, but it was also about this. I think it's related to accountability because it's like, hold yourself accountable, make the decision, move forward. And you learn and you grow and you iterate and such. So it's not spot on, but I think it's a related concept.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think that's a great add there, Tom. So express your passion, look for passion.
Right. Express passion, look for passion. I don't care what you do in your job, but when I'm interviewing people, when I'm working with my colleagues, I want to see passion for what they do. I don't care if you're the person at the front desk when you walk in, or you're the security guard, or tease this woman, I used to call her the rev rec lady at RSA. She loved her job. It was a tough job. Like, who wants to do rev rec? But she did it, and she did it extremely well, and she loved her job. And I want people around me that have that passion. I mean, they don't have to be these extroverts, but I want them to really feel good about what they're doing and how they're contributing and how they are part of that. And if I can't get passionate about what I'm doing, then I want to question why I'm doing it. You know, and when I go into situations, I think of it as my head, my heart, and my stomach. My head is, you know, I think and get data and all those kinds of things. And, you know, your heart is your passion. And can I get passionate about this opportunity or what I'm doing? Then your stomach is your gut and your intuition. But the heart is a big part of it, the big part of the passion about what I'm doing and how I'm contributing and how I'm part of the team. And what is our mission and what is our solution and how are we contributing to the greater good? And so that's what this is about, is just looking for people, whether they're coders or salespeople or rev rec, I don't care, but I want people that love what they're doing.
I think it's an interesting term, Tom, because I think a lot of people are afraid of that term because that would imply too much commitment to one's career, like the work-life balance side of it. And, I just think for the vast, vast majority of us, we have to work. So why not be really freaking passionate about it and become an expert and want to dominate a situation and bring everything you have to it, as opposed to, I think, again, my daughter told me a story of a lot of our friends at a big public accounting firm don't put corporate email on their phones because their phone is their personal space. And my daughter said, that doesn't make any sense to me. I'm like, well, you know, that's going to affect them 20 years from now. They just don't know it, right? But bringing passion early in your career and throughout your career, like, hey, you know, like, very few people have the luxury of saying, I cannot work. So for the vast majority of us, we have to. Why not bring it all? That passion will be rewarded. And it's more enjoyable. Dreading every day and holding back something from your job, I just think is hollow. And you know, I feel sad for people that don't want to express and be passionate and committed to making something great happen. So Tom, next one, do the best job possible. Careers and compensation will follow. And I know this is one that you taught me early and I didn't always follow it. So, but I think let's help our early people early in the career to learn this early, because it's helped me the second half of my career, but it hurt me the first half of the career.
What I say on this one, and this one I kind of self-taught, I believe. And this one is just like, first of all, start off with the premise you're owed nothing. You're not owed a promotion. You're not owed a pay increase. You're owed nothing. Just start with that. And then start to think about the more effective you will be, the more opportunities will be presented to you. So the more successful, and have faith that it will be acknowledged, recognized, and rewarded. And I've had many people who, like the one time that I put, after EMC, one time I put an opportunity for equity in front of the actual opportunity. It was a huge mistake. I chased something that was really not that important, and it was a stupid decision on my part. So I broke that late in my career just because it was dangled there, and it was a really bad choice. I didn't go with my head, my heart, and my stomach on that, and I just went, and you can see head, heart, and stomach, and the money's not even part of that, right? But this one is, now the caveat to this one is, when there is an opportunity that's in front of you, like there's a promotion or another opportunity, fight for it. This is not talking about sitting back and taking a laissez-faire approach to it. So you fight for that. Now, this implies a fair amount of ambition in your careers also. This implies that you have interest in doing more and taking on more responsibility and earning more. And once again, you're owed nothing. This has to do with what you earn. And so that's what this is talking about, Gene, is like, crush it. I want to do the best job possible. I did something that wasn't very nice several years ago to the CEO of EMC. And my mentor said, what do you want? I go, I just want to do the best job possible. And he goes, well, you can't do that. You can't slam the door on the CEO. And he was right. And I wasn't fired. But it's that simple. It's just like, do the best job possible, outperform what the expectations are. And you will get more money. You will get more responsibility if you want it.
The story that I think about, Tom, and you gave me this advice a long time ago, was during my career at EMC, went along. It was going well. I got, thanks to you, promoted to a manager. And then I got, because of the economy collapse, there weren't management roles. I got put back in an individual contributor role. And I couldn't reorient myself to going, look, just go back to crushing that job as an individual contributor, which I knew I could do, and the opportunities would come. Instead, I was just trying to put myself in those opportunities, but yet I wasn't doing a great job, my current job. So it's like, duh, like, no, you're not going to get offered those positions because you're not crushing it in your current job. So I did a better job in my second half of my career on that one. But I do think it's, to your point, it's laser focus on being great at what you want. And with an addition, when the opportunity comes, make sure people know that you want it, that you're interested.
Absolutely.
You're going to do everything you can to earn it. Not that somebody's going to give it to you, but you're going to earn it. So I think it's a really, really important one. So next one, Tom, you get outside your comfort zone. What does that mean?
Getting outside your comfort zone, I think, you know, in our industry, I think we're blessed with a bunch of very, very bright people. And in general, I think we're dealing with a lot of life learners. So with this one, I found with my career is when my learning curve is steep, and whether it's because of the role or whatever, new company, new industry, new role, new challenge, new opportunity, when the learning curve is steep, I'm at my best. And when the learning curve flattens, I'm not at my best. So what this one is talking about, keeping that learning curve steep, whether it's taking a class outside, going for, you know, a graduate degree, part-time, whatever it happens to be, taking on a new role within your existing company. It's just, I found, and I try to encourage my team members to do the same thing, is constantly be challenged and think of new ways to learn and to grow. And I think that personally, I'm at my best when that learning curve is steep, and I've seen that in others as well.
Definitely. It reminds me of, I was part of a startup, employee number 14. We grew it to almost $20 million and eventually sold it to IBM. And over the course of 5.5 years, it was 4.5 years of fun. And then once it became part of IBM, it kind of slowed down and it was more about maintenance and more about maintaining the status quo. And even though IBM pays incredibly well, I just couldn't get out of bed because it was like, nobody's trying to change the world here. Everybody's just trying to stay in the game. And, you know, hey, it's a 300 person company. It's 100 years old. So it's a different vibe. But for me, I think it is like the more dynamic it is, the more opportunities it is to learn. I think that energizes me. And I think, and you said, you got to be self-aware of what your individual desires are. That's not for everybody. But I think there's a lot of, it's a lot of excitement if you can stay outside your comfort zone in a constant learning environment.
I completely agree. Why don't we jump to the self-awareness one, Gino, and we'll come back to the other one.
Absolutely, yes.
I think it queued that up very well. So the other one is maintain a high level of self-awareness. Now, how do you do that, right? And whenever anybody tells me how self-aware they are, you know what I say to myself? They're not self-aware. If anybody tells me how ethical they are, they're not. Mm-hmm. And when they tell me how smart they are, typically they're not.
Yeah.
So it's this type of thing is like, what does that really mean? And I think for self-awareness, I know this is going to sound funny because it doesn't have to do with yourself, but you need others to help you with that. You need other people to work with to really bring that. You know, when I was being coached, the number one attribute, and I'm sure it hasn't changed, you know, from whatever, 15 years ago, number one attribute of top CEOs is high level of true self-awareness. They understood their strengths. They understood their weaknesses. They complemented themselves with team members who had skills that they didn't have. And then the number one derailer for top executives, overplayed strength. I'm a strategy guy. So all I do is spend my time on the strategy. I'm a technologist. All I do is spend my time on technology or want to spend my time on technology, right? And so if you think of that, but I think true self-awareness, and I know it's called self-awareness versus having others help you, but understanding your strengths, your weaknesses. Mine was, I was a hammer and everything looked like a nail and, you know, everything was offensive and I was being rewarded for that, but there was no pull. And that was my light that went off with a lot of coaching that helped me identify that as a weakness because it was way overplayed. So that's what I'm talking about with this one is really understanding what your strengths and weaknesses are. Don't overplay your strengths.
I think about going all the way back to college for me, and my first time of self-awareness was I was working on a group project, and we finished up, and we did really well, and this lovely lady turns to me, and she goes, you are really difficult to work with. You got it done. We got it done, but you're really difficult to work with. I'm like, really? Because my image of myself is I'm this easygoing, relaxed, fun person. And they're like, no, you're not. Like, not even a little bit, you know? Like, but it was that moment of like, oh, I guess I am kind of a hard ass sometimes. And it was eye-opening because I didn't think of myself that way at all. I thought I was really easygoing and everybody's ideas counted. And it's like, they were like, who are you talking about? Like,
you know? Yeah. But sometimes when you're in the hunt, right? When you're in the hunt and when you're, you know, you're trying to get something done, sometimes you get this like tunnel vision, right? So you're so focused on something, it really does put blinders on. And I think it's one of my other, maybe we could talk about it some other session, but you know, we talk about the aperture. I think you kind of lose sight of everything else that's going on around because of that maniacal focus, right? And perhaps that plays into this as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So Tom, why don't we go back to 7 and don't run from the job, walk to the right one. I've given this advice many, many times and not always done it on my own, but I think it's a really good one for those thinking about maybe a job change right now.
I think of it on a scale of 1 to 10. 10 is I'm quitting today. I don't have a job to go to. I hate this. I hate my boss. I'm quitting today and I'm not even thinking about tomorrow. On the other end of the spectrum, on number one is I just got a job offer unsolicited for three times what I'm making, but I'm not going because I love it. And then someplace in the middle five is, yeah, I'll take that occasional inbound phone call, right? So if you think about where are you on that spectrum now? So each person that's listening to that, think about where are you on that? And the further you go to the number 10, you know, the higher probabilities you're going to make a change. Now, all I would say on this is when you go to a 9 or a 10 or even an 8 sometimes on that, you kind of lose sight of your job, what's in front of you, and it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. And I can't tell you how many people, and in general, I'm very unsuccessful at this. I had this conversation, like you just mentioned, is trying to get friends, colleagues, whatever, to just chill out, right?
Yeah.
Because you always have to think that your next role that you're going to have or company is the most important job you're going to have. So think of it that way and be highly selective. And I don't care if you're 26 years old or 55 years old, you know, whatever the age is, you have to think about the next job as being the most important one for you and go through the head, heart, and stomach thing. You know, the head is all the data and everything you can gather on it. The heart is the passion. The stomach is the intuition. But if you're committed to leaving, that's fine. But I don't, quiet quitting. Don't do that. That's, you know, that to me, that's unethical. That's really an unethical thing. But give yourself some time. Continue to contribute to your company while you're thinking through this. And don't just go after things that you're recruited for. Go outbound. Think of the industries you want to be in, the sector you want to be in, the role you want to be in, the size of the company you want to be in, the stage of the company, venture, private equity, growth equity, public. Think of all these things and munch them together and then come up with a list of ideal candidates of where you want to go. Do not get recruited that doesn't fit the profile of where you think you're going to be able to contribute and to be successful. So that's what I'm talking about. Don't run from a job. Always take your time. And I am not a patient person. This is one area that you should be patient, is be patient and go through a process about what that next opportunity is.
I get calls like you, Tom, where we are blessed to have so many friends in the industry that people we can reach out to when we've got a difficult decision and that call us when they have a difficult decision. And I think the number of times where somebody says, well, I've got A and B or A, B and C, and they start telling me all the differences, the pros and cons. I like, stop. I said, what are your beacons? What are the things that forget A, B, C, because there's E, F, G, H, like forget about those. Tell me like what you're trying to accomplish. And a friend of ours, it gave me this advice one time. He says, when you're thinking about going to the next job, take a blank sheet of paper and do exactly what you just said, Tom. Write as much detail of what that job looks like, feels like, stage of company, investors, everything you can think about. And now you've got your North Stars. Now you're going to make trade-offs. Hey, it's a bigger company than I thought about, but it's a really cool, whatever. But you've got your North Stars, you've got your tenants, because otherwise, A to B to C, everybody's selling you to join the company. So they're going to only tell you all the great things about it. And if you're looking for a new real estate and a new place to buy, and your beacon is to live in Manhattan, you're not flying to San Francisco or to Des Moines. You just aren't, right? Because you've decided you're going to live in Manhattan. So I think you have to have those North Stars to start this process.
Yes.
Awesome.
Completely agree.
Tom, you hit on it, but just to reiterate, this is for people that have a job that are looking. Obviously, if you've just gotten, you've gotten thrown out with the latest round of cuts, you know, still take the time to find the right opportunity. Even if you have some financial stress, take as much time as you can, at least from a financial perspective. It doesn't take long to write down your North Stars and then start to interview against those as opposed to just see, oh, what can I get next? Because I got to get some income.
That's a great point. Definitely. Definitely. Just chill.
So, yeah, exactly. So this next one, you and I, probably a weakness of ours, but if it feels good, don't do it.
Big weakness of mine. Yeah, this is one that, like I said about slamming the door on the CEO, it's like, you know, this is one that's gotten me in hot water. Two of my companies, I took on board members, and one was a venture-backed one, and one was private equity. I was trying to win the battle, and you lose the war on this one. I learned this one at 22 years old from badge number 3 at EMC, Paul Noble. And Paul's a great guy. He was one of my bosses growing up. And he used to say that. And yeah, Paul, yeah, got it. But even today, like, you know, I did this year ago. What was I thinking? I was so determined that I had to get this across and that I was right. And I still to this day that I think I was right. It doesn't matter. I was ineffective. I didn't effectively get this done. Some people are very good at this. I'm very bad at this. I think you've made strides on this, but you know, part of our strength, you and I, because I know you well, is our passion. If that passion crosses over to emotion, that's a bad thing. So carry the passion, lose the emotion. That's what Tucci told me. Don't ever lose the passion.
For our listeners that aren't dealing with boards and venture capital and things like this, the story might not resonate, but bear with me for a second. My first job as a VP of sales with a tier one venture backed company wasn't going well. And I was in a meeting and I won't name the board member, but it's a tier one VC. And we got into an argument and I won the argument. No doubt I won the argument. I came home and I said, I'm about to get fired. Like, there's no doubt that I won that argument, but he is going to fire me. And about, you know, 30 days later, I was out of my ass. Yeah. And it felt great because I was the moral high ground. I had my facts and figures, but it's like,
I'm sure you were right also. Right. Yeah. I'm sure your decision was right. But in the end, you know, we have to judge ourselves by how effective we were.
I could have made exactly the same points instead of being at a 10 in emotion, being at a 3 or a 5. And probably would have gotten people's attention as opposed to forcing it on that one. Tom and I laugh about this one because sometimes we call each other before we're about to do this and try to talk ourselves out of it. And we still sometimes do it. And other times we go, oh, yeah. Thank you. Okay. That was, I'm glad I didn't do it. It really felt good.
Just take a chill pill. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So last one, Tom, for this session, to focus on what you can control.
Right. So this one, you know, I apply to my personal life. I apply to my business and focus on what you can control and influence. Just think of the news right now, the global macroeconomic issues, war, everything that's going on. And I watch news constantly and I read the news constantly and I, you know, read from left to right and right to left and in between. But I try not to let those things, I want to be informed, but I don't want them to affect me because I can't control those. I can't influence those. So what I try to do within my personal life is worry. Everybody worries. Everybody worries. But I try to focus on where my energy goes for worrying to what I have a say in, whether it's a direct control over, which is rare, or influence. And that's what I'm trying to get at here. And it's hard because it's hard not to worry about, you know, what's going on in Israel and such now and the Gaza Strip and everything else that's going on with China and Taiwan. It's hard not to worry about those things. But I try to control that where I focus on things that are within my area of influence.
And I know you meditate, Tom, and I don't, but I read somewhat about it. It's sometimes being present in the current surroundings of it and not trying to figure out what the end result is going to be, because maybe the end result you can't even control. So creating angst as to what's going to happen with your current job or how the macroeconomics is going to affect your current job. It's like, yeah, be present in that current situation. And to your point, the things that surround you and you can control today, as opposed to trying to figure out what your career looks like 10 years from now or what happens with your current company? Does it get sold? Doesn't it get sold? Does it get funding? It's like, well, hey, settle yourself down to centering on the things that are today that are present in front of you, as opposed to those loud things that are so unknown in the future.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Awesome.
You know, it's like, think of it. I'm chairman of the board of a company now. And so we have to be aware of global macroeconomics and how does that influence it. I was listening to Dan Adamany, the CEO, yesterday, and he did a great job on his kickoff presentation, and he talked about that, but he also said, I can't use that as an excuse. I just have to focus on what I can do and what our team can do. And he totally took ownership for the performance of the company. And he's not letting the global, he's aware of it. He reads about it. You know, he talks to people. He has people that coach him. So he's got a great perspective on that, but he doesn't use that as an excuse, going back to one of our first ones, right?
Right.
He was accountable, but he's also focusing on what he believes he can influence and control. Yeah. And I thought that was a great message yesterday.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that's a nice way to leave this episode, Tom. It's like, let's focus on what we can control. So, Tom, thank you again for this session. Stay tuned for the next session. Yeah, thank you very much, Tom.
My pleasure, Gino.
We'll get the next session out where we're going to talk more about management tenets for those that have management ambitions or managing people today. I think you're getting a lot out of that. As a reminder to our listeners looking to up their cybersecurity skills, you can get 1 year free content from our cybersecurity training portal, ThreatX Academy, by using the promo code podcast. ThreatX Academy covers a wide variety of cybersecurity topics. You can learn more by going to academy.threatx.com. Also, check out a recent popular episode with MK Palomar, who is the director in the office of the CISO at Google and the VP at Cyversity. I think he actually just got promoted. I think he's now the president of Cyversity. Great gentleman, and that episode really has some great gold nuggets. And finally, if you'd like to learn more about API and application security, please visit our website, threatx.com. Tom, thank you again. Looking forward to recording our next episode.
Thank you, Gene.